Hello, this is Peter Davison. You're listening to Gallifrey Public Radio.
Gallifrey Public Radio, a weekly podcast dedicated to positive enjoyment of Doctor Who. We travel through classic and new episodes, explore the extended universe, and play a few games from time to time. We do discuss news, content that has been officially released, and the occasional interesting rumor, but we'll warn you before anything considered spoilers comes up.
Welcome to episode 438 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we are specifically told we cannot go back to prehistoric Earth in the TARDIS, and so we hop on a Concorde and go back to prehistoric Earth. I'm Julie.
I'm Kier.
I'm Haley.
And I'm Jay. This week, it's the aftermath of Adric's demise and a time contour scenario that sends two supersonic jets and an anachronistic blue box to the Jurassic. Season 19 closes with the time flight. And another classic plot twist that we really ought to see coming by now.
Episode 1 sets the stage with the aforementioned jets getting pulled out of time, one by accident, the other by the Doctor's design when called in to help. Everyone ends up in the Jurassic era, but the crew of the first plane is nowhere to be found.
We soon realize that a flat-out culturally offensive villain, Khalid, is manipulating things to his own end, and with the help of the British Airways crew, the Doctor learns that he is none other than the Master.
After the midpoint in the story, things get a bit hectic as we learn that the Master is attempting to scuttle an ancient consciousness that just happens to be here on Earth to be the power source for his TARDIS, and the Doctor and team obviously try to thwart that plan.
From then on, it's a matter of a bunch of scrabbling over parts, signs of a psychic civil war among the Xerophon, fix the thing from Scraps montage, and a return to Heathrow. Wasn't that what Tegan wanted all along?
Oh yes, yes, you're surrounded by a lot of powerful bioenergetics, Khalid, but I can't help feeling there's something a great deal more mechanistic about all this.
Mechanistic?
What are you doing sitting at the end of a time contour like a spider in a web? And what do you want with my TARDIS?
My familiar spirits have told me of your miraculous cabinets. The spirits have told me you would come.
Your spirits are very well informed.
Okay, this was a story that aired.
It yep. was.
And it we are a positive Doctor Who podcast. So.
Good night, everybody.
We are going to find the gems in this bowl of oatmeal. So we start with our first plot, which is this idea of these time contours, sort of a Bermuda Triangle thing that the whopping two air controllers at Heathrow, they weren't allowed to actually film in the control booths at Heathrow, so they made a room that just had one radar screen and two guys in it.
I think that was a video game, and he was not actually pinging radar.
That guy over there is playing Galaga. but it's not a bad premise, right? You know, the plane gets sucked out of time, and Doctor shows up after a little bit of confusery on the scene. Everybody's very mopey. Adric's dead. Don't we all feel bad? And then after what I will say is an enjoyable little bit of dialogue, the Doctor says, "Well, why don't you call UNIT? Do a little bit of name dropping, you know, see if the Brigadier can cover my tracks, or maybe he's a general by now. I don't know."
Before we get to UNIT, can we talk about how the Doctor thinks the proper way to move through grief is to go on a fun vacation?
Yes. I think that's valid.
I think there's some work that could be done there.
If you had to put the family puppy down and the kids were really distraught, you take them to Disneyland. That's just, you distract them. Look, kids, shiny objects.
You are not calling Adric the family puppy.
Adric was absolutely the puppy.
He's the family puppy if you've got a family puppy that bites a lot.
Yeah, nobody really likes, but you can't really get rid of.
We'll have a little side note about Adric in a second here. But I mean, are we okay through the first episode? This whole idea of, all right, well, maybe we just gotta retrace our steps. Let's grab that Concorde jet over there, and we'll stuff the TARDIS in the down in the cargo hold, and we'll do it all again, and watch it happen. I mean, that so far.
What could possibly go wrong?
If I have learned anything from coding, it is that you do try to repeat to solve and see if you get the same results.
Absolutely.
So fair enough. I think the doctor's got a little bit of that up his sleeve.
Sure.
So if it hadn't worked, would the doctor have just written down, could not replicate, and closed the ticket?
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because, well, you know, some things, well, what are you going to do? I tried. I got to go.
We were trying to chase him down, and now I got somewhere else to be. Okay, mm-hmm. Bye.
So, but then it's screaming the fact that we are at Heathrow. We get to see certain on-location shots. We get the humorous little thing with the TARDIS somewhere in the middle of Terminal 1. It's causing a bit of a kerfuffle. I mean, that's so far fairly entertaining, right? I mean, this is making for the good setup for a classic story. British Airways must be making some serious bucks on all this product placement going on. Because I think the first commercial flight for the Concorde was late 70s, like 76 or so. Mm-hmm. And this is 83, so it's right at the peak of like the Concorde was like flying the Concorde was a big deal, especially within the first couple of decades that it was flying, and it was like this posh thing. It cost like $12,000 to fly across the English Channel and back on this thing, and that's in like 70s money. Mm-hmm. So,
how did you look that up?
I did.
Good.
But I was fascinated by it at the time, because this was something that I remember when this was coming about and when I was a kid. I'm like, this whole idea of you can break the sound barrier on a commercial, like I could just walk into an airport and get on a plane that can do that and I don't have to work for the Air Force or anything. All right, this is cool. How much does it cost? Never mind. I'm only 10. Okay.
That's fine. I can just swim the English Channel instead.
I liked the commentary between Nyssa and Tegan about, well, it's just a police box. It'll be fine. Like, Nyssa knows, like, oh, they're everywhere, right?
Yeah. This is one of your Earth things.
This is an Earth thing, right? It's just there. And then Tegan's like, well, kind of for one, no, but also that's outdated and yeah. It's an airport?
I didn't explain enough about what this thing actually looks like on the outside. Let me just tell you how weird this is.
In the middle of a walkway, nonetheless.
It's like right in the middle of the carpet. People are like bumping strollers into it.
The only thing that would have made it slightly better is if they had the people movers and it was right in the middle of one, but I don't think that was even a thing back then.
No people movers. You barely had escalators.
Too big for a people mover.
Yeah. Well,
no, I'm saying like blocking so you get to bump the end of the people mover
and you just whack.
Boom. How am I? Boom.
They say to be careful because the walkway is coming to an end. You're supposed to have your eyes open and heads up. So, but then we get to this shift in the plot where, okay, now it's just not just a matter of figuring out how these two, count them, two supersonic jets were able to land on prehistoric Earth. With nary a mechanical problem whatsoever.
Just, no. The brakes.
The brake line. Was a little squidgy. Yeah. But he fixed that by turning it with his hand.
Exactly.
But then now we realize that there is a new problem to deal with. And that's the fact that we can't find the first crew, right? They're all missing. Oh, what's that strange structure over there that looks...
a bit building-esque.
Yeah. Hmm. And a profound lack of freaking dinosaurs.
Well, except that one bird at the end.
One bird, yeah, well, one, yeah. The seagull.
Was it 142 million years ago? Is that what it was supposed to be?
Yes, they specifically said we had landed in the Jurassic.
Okay.
I want something.
I was waiting for the dinosaur, I must admit.
Really? Mm-hmm. Just something. I mean,
they paid for all that Concorde footage. They couldn't afford a dinosaur.
Well, that's just it. Apparently, the budget was blown by this point because they had been doing consecutive airings since they had produced Shada. So they had been going without really any sort of break. It was like continuous broadcasting, which will be kind of interesting because after this point, they take a break. This was like March of 83, and they didn't... No, 82, sorry. And they didn't come back on the air until January of 83, which means their little cliffhanger of a bit at the end there sat for a modern series kind of delay. What's going on? But yeah, all right. So, Khalid, an attempt was made to come.
I don't know what they were attempting, but yeah,
they did it.
They certainly did.
Yep, they sure did.
I mean, man, you'd think they would have learned from the talons of Wen Chang, but they didn't learn anything.
The words he was chanting were also a little peculiar.
At times, he was just doing some sort of, like, I think he was actually taking the command that he was issuing and just saying it with the syllables all kind of distorted in time. And then at times, he was just coming up with what he thought was, hey, crazy oriental mumbo jumbo. And, wow.
Was that actually Ainley in there?
Yeah. With a bald cap over his wig.
Just to make it seem real.
His insistence. I don't...
Is he a method actor?
He must be.
Maybe he couldn't get into being the master, being Khalid, without, you know, his wig.
I have to pretend that there's a better me on the inside. But
it's his security blanket, the hair.
Yeah, is that it? Yeah, perfect widow's peaks.
Just keeps him warm.
But that idea of shifting the story now is sort of upping the ante on the story. So now it's not just a matter of how do we find the original crew and get both planes back safely. Now we've got something else in the mix. We've got this baddie at the time, Khalid, who is messing with people's minds, right? Because Nyssa, all of a sudden, is having visions, and no one questions it for a while.
She's just our weird friend.
Yeah, but even Tegan's like watching her say, no, we can't go across to the mountain. We can't do these things. And Tegan's like, all right, well, fine. I guess I'll go over here then. You don't notice your friend is staring at the middle distance and like becoming the oracle for a second? She's done weirder stuff.
I think she just does do weird stuff. And they just kind of take it in stride. They don't know when it's playing and when it's just, she's a bit weird.
Apparently she unlocked a new ability. We didn't see the caption go by on the screen. So there you go. But we learned that Khalid can manipulate minds. So as they're trying to get towards his inner sanctum, they're going past visions. And lo and behold, who do we get to see?
Adric with a pin.
Adric with an intact badge. The tell.
For his maths.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
And we get the Melker, right? Yeah. That was trying to haunt Nyssa. Yeah. I wish they could have pulled out a bunch more of those just for fun.
The times in which the master was involved, villains.
Mm. Well, clearly Adric was the master all along, so he was the first one to show up.
Right. Yep.
So when we finally get to the chamber, and Khalid gets knocked down.
Oh, you mean when he springs a leak at his news
with the green goop out of the nose and everything?
That's where they got the extra brake fluid.
That was the brake fluid that was missing from the second airliner. But he does the reveal and everything, and I swear at this point, I just turned to Julie and said it was Agatha all along. I couldn't. It's becoming. All right, there were plans that this was going to be the story where they killed the master, like permanently killed off the character.
Sure.
Because they felt there were at least one or two individuals who felt that the character had kind of run its course and there was nothing new or original they could do.
Not ever again, could they, huh?
Yeah.
Nothing new.
Couldn't leave well enough alone.
Well, even if they had killed him, again, Time Lord, so... And they've killed him before. Like, what does that matter?
Right. Right.
Do what you want. I'll be back.
So, all right, you've got a story that's kind of whatever. You know, it's got some elements that we all recognize. All right, well, there's the master. He's doing his master thing. Look, he must have some sort of plan. Oh, he's stuck here. Ha ha. Yeah, you bozo. So he's doing his spider in the web thing. He's sort of sucking things back in through time until he gets the pieces he needs to get out of Dodge. But you couldn't leave well enough alone. You gotta take the story further. And that's when we start getting involved with sentient blobs and the guys in the silver suits with the sculpy hair.
So how easy would that be to cosplay?
Pretty easy, because they didn't even wear gloves. You just saw their skin just ended at their wrists.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I think it, collectively, from just about every review that you can read from the time, because the viewership numbers plunged over the course of four episodes. It went from their usual 8, 9, 10 million viewers down to 3 to 4 million and didn't recover until Rose in 2005. So if you want to blame a story, this would be the one. I don't know. I want to find things in here that I like. They're like moments, right? Do we have at least some moments?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Okay.
So a thing they don't do very often in Doctor Who, and I've talked about this before, is play with time. Like, a lot of times the TARDIS is just getting you to the beginning of the story, and then time travel doesn't really come in, but they did kind of play with time in this one, and I like that they did that. They used time travel to beat the Master to the place that they sent him. Like, that was fun and clever.
Yeah, yeah.
I liked the callback of the miniaturization. And I loved how often the Doctor would just tell everyone, oh, I'll explain later, but then say, oh, I wish I had time to explain this, but I'll tell you later.
Yeah. Davison gets to work that line a lot over his era.
Yeah.
I like the use of the professor, even though he was a bit of a jerk character, but this idea of someone who is convinced, I know what's going on, you are all simpletons. And charlatans. So I will be the one to take this on. That was a mistake. Dead.
But he had his little tiny comeback.
Yes, he got his consciousness sucked in to the Xerophon. So enjoy that one, Professor.
Get all your pedants out now, because you're going to be stuck with these creatures in ghost form.
You thought you were a know-it-all. Wait until you come up with this singular civilization consciousness that you have to say, well, actually, at you for the rest of time. Yeah. That's the ultimate comeback for the mansplainer, is to force him into a global consciousness. True knowledge is in knowing that you know nothing.
You don't know what you know.
I like the fact that damn near everybody gets to fly the TARDIS in the story.
Right?
Everybody. The camera guy, everybody. The guy who holds the boom.
So I also really appreciate that the easiest lever, which is the big red knob, when you walk right in the front door, and they go in and they say, oh, how could we shut the door? Clearly not this dangerous red button. Let's go around to the other side and flip all the switches.
Why do you think the Doctor painted it red? They won't touch it if it's a red button.
And I loved that it was sort of lunch tray serving style parts that you could just slide right into the TARDIS console bottom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
And that neither the Doctor nor the Master thought, let me actually check which part. There has to be labels or something, and it's just random. No,
they're so smart, they can just tell at a glance. It's fine.
Yeah.
But I love the fact that the one part that was actually like kind of bowl-shaped, and you saw the Master just kind of like reach up under the console and just very obviously just set it down on something.
Yeah. And it's like putting Tupperware back in the cabinet.
Right.
Yep. Insert.
I'm pretty sure it was a colander, and it needed to let the steam out.
Right. Yeah.
Yes. It was one of those little covers for your microwave that keeps a splatter from...
No. And the folding colander for like...
Oh, the little steamer. Strainer basket thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly, that is more feasible than some of the science we got out of this thing.
That's true. Man, they came up with so many names for all the parts. When it started getting to the... Like, the third episode is pretty much a hot mess. Because it's just a matter of, oh, I don't have the part, you have the part. Well, I'm going to hold you ransom for the part. All right, well, I'm going to trade you for this part. Oh, but I don't have that part, so I'm going to build that part out of some other parts.
But let me plug in this tube twice.
It's like Settlers of Catan, but Doctor Who parts.
Right. And meanwhile, you got a bunch of geriatrics with crowbars trying to bust it. Man, those scenes take forever. This was a throwback to some of the things about, like, Pertwee and Tom Baker era stories that make you look at your watch constantly going, I don't know if I have the stamina for this.
But everybody's uncle got to be a flight passenger, and that made a lot of people excited, I bet.
Interesting little bit of trivia. When they bring in the flight attendant and add her into the mix, she had a bunch of dialogue written to be nastier about the passengers. Like, she was apparently supposed to be like this disgruntled character.
But I think it worked better to have her be the way she ended up.
British Airways stepped in and said they didn't want her to refer to passengers that way as a representative of their airline. So, okay. So you can't call them punters. Fair. But I don't know. By the time I started having problems in episode three, but by episode four, I just wanted it to end.
Can I say one more thing about the passengers?
Yeah, yeah.
So you clearly are, you know that you're in sort of a fight for your life situation, and you've been told by one team to, this is your plane home, mm-hmm. and the master just goes, no, don't. They just stop walking, like almost Willy Wonka-esque, like, mm-hmm. no, don't go that way. You're going to get hurt. So, sorry, I just needed to get that one off the chest.
I do appreciate the, again, the whole idea of, and the professor teed up a lot of this because it forced the doctor to do a little bit of higgledy-piggledy explanations of TARDIS, within airplane, disguised as TARDIS, within TARDIS, and mm-hmm. and that kind of stuff is fun because it clearly you're dealing with a writer who knows the mechanics of the show and can
enjoy it. The pace definitely picked up the last 10 minutes. We go from still being trapped, not a lot of stuff happening, the swap of machinery parts, mm-hmm. and then boom, 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 everything kind of did happen.
Yeah. Once you've got a path to the end game, that works well. I think there's just that whole midsection that just really got far muddier than it needed to be. I think this could have worked completely fine if you took the whole Zerafin thing out of it whatsoever and just mm-hmm. had the master trying to scuttle the doctor's TARDIS for what was needed to get out of there. Done. Yep. That's all you needed.
Yeah.
I was thinking the same thing. The Zerafin is like one thing too many mm-hmm. to shove into this episode.
Well, and can someone explain to me why the master had to be disguised as this character in the first place? Like,
no.
The Zerafin knew that he was a Time Lord, and everybody else was under hypnosis. Like, it was really just there so that the doctor didn't know it was him for about 5 minutes.
Because then he got to take off a mask again. Yes. That's why.
So that they could put Anthony Ainley's name in some sort of cryptic scramble on the credits for an episode or two.
How long did the master know the doctor was on the way? Or does the master just live in disguise until the next time the doctor shows up? Because I very much believe that the master just becomes, assumes another personality until the doctor's going to show up someday and I will be ready.
Yeah.
It's going to be so awesome when I reveal myself.
I'm going to melt first this time.
Next time I'm going to blow apart in pixels. Like I'm de-rezzing. It's going to be
spoilers,
amazing.
Hey, spoilers. I'm sure, right? Yeah.
That hasn't even aired yet, but we're getting there. But yeah, I think you're absolutely right. This is something where that was the one component too far, because if you had just taken that out of it and found a way to be able to smooth over the crack from your final 10 minutes, where it's a matter of, we figured out a way to get back and tinker with the parts that we gave the master to put back in his TARDIS that's going to force him to be 10 minutes behind us or whatever.
In my nap I took on the floor under the TARDIS console, I thought of this great idea.
He was thinking. It was the closest he could get to the zero room where he does all this really good thinking, like if, the bathroom.
If you took out the Zerafin, you would have lost Nyssa's, we must channel our energies and point at them.
Oh, what a loss.
Yeah. Wow. That was an awkward couple of minutes of television.
Yeah.
We have to use our minds. Oh, boy. Is this what we've gotten to? That's like fighting it off with the power of love. Oh, wait. We did that, too.
Yeah.
I won't bother with rewatchability and recommendability, but I will say, would you rewatch it just for laughs? Or is it too offensive at times to even be worth the laugh?
Yeah. Like, it wasn't entertaining enough. to keep my attention the first time, I don't think that I'm going to be able to sit through it again.
Yeah.
Aside from the cringe factor, there really isn't anything humorous in it.
What about just so that you get the stranded Tegan moments? Or can you just say, here, watch this clip on YouTube of the last 2 minutes of this story, and that's all you need to know?
Yep.
Yeah, basically.
Or you can just tell somebody, the doctor goes back to Heathrow and then leaves Tegan, jump to season 20.
Actually consciously deciding, well, this is what she wanted, I'm sure she'll be fine. And this, okie dokie, let's just go, because we can't think of another way out of this plot at this point.
I would only rewatch this episode for a drinking game.
All right. There we have it.
As long as that drinking game was get completely blasted right up front, yes.
No, this would have to be one where you would have to take a sip every time you see something on screen that either makes you eye roll or wince.
So get completely blasted right up front. Got it.
No, yeah. I thought the first episode, you'd survive the first 22 minutes.
Yeah, no. But the problem I had was, like, I watched the first two episodes yesterday and got to the point where they revealed the master. And I'm like, oh, things should be interesting now. And I'll finish it tomorrow. That wasn't even enough to get me to, like, watch the first 5 minutes of the next episode. It was just like, I'll watch it tomorrow.
So I would have to eye roll at the very beginning when the doctor says, it's fine. Adric, we can't go back.
Well, we've been acclimated to understand there are fixed points, but they didn't give that explanation. I think this might have been some of the...
No, he did legitimately say there are fixed points. That is one of them. And Nyssa then made the argument of, we could go back. The plane can still crash. We can grab Adric and pull him out of there. No, no, no. Just trust me on this one.
I secretly don't want to.
Yes.
That's really subtext in that one.
Yeah.
Adric Waterhouse's appearance, or Adric, Matthew Waterhouse's appearance as Adric in this was only there to finalize his contract. Oh, wow. So he got one appearance, spoke a line, boop, paycheck. Done. And he has said on multiple occasions since then that he's really glad that he wasn't involved any further in it because he thought the story was garbage.
Matthew Waterhouse is crapping on your episode. That's how bad it was.
Sarah Sutton didn't like the story because she didn't understand a word of it.
Fair.
Peter Davison said he didn't like it because he thought it had a lot more promise, but it was executed poorly because everything was so low budget.
You went back in time, dude.
No, but he's like, the monsters were balls of foam with legs sticking out of them. You know,
the budget didn't help, but
they look to me like drip castles made of sand. You know what I'm talking about? Yep. When you go to the beach, instead of building a sandcastle, you drip them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's sand drip castles from the Jurassic.
But thankfully, you know, you've all, listeners, you've watched it with us, and now you can call it done, too, and move on to the next step in your pilgrimage. So, congratulations.
Indeed.
So, did Janet Fielding like this one?
No, she did not like it either.
She got left.
No, but she didn't like it for a lot of reasons. She felt the story was weak, and she said, I think something along the lines of she didn't know, she didn't realize it was as bad as it was until she went back and rewatched it.
That makes me wonder if there was stuff that got cut that might have improved it, or if she just wasn't privy to enough of it, and she was like, oh, well, I'm sure they're doing amazing things over on the other set.
I would bet it's probably that, because they were distanced for a lot of it. And so she, when they showed up, it could have seemed like other stuff was going on.
Right.
And they referenced a lot of like, oh, you found this. Oh, this happened.
Oh, we've moved this far in the story? Oh, there must be some great stuff that I haven't read. I can't wait to see the dailies.
Well, I wondered.
No.
So next week we're going to be doing something kind of fun. We've just had Adric's death. Recently we said goodbye to Ryan and Graham in the live time viewing of the show. So we're going to take a kind of a pause and take a look back at companions' exits and how some of them have compared to others and what really makes them stick in our mind. Which ones are memorable and for what reasons?
Highs and lows, both?
Yeah.
No one can use the Adric's gone now, because we just did that.
This has been episode 438 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, well, I know how to fly an airplane, so what is a space time machine if not just a fancy one?
And this is Kira saying, I can't technically miss you until you're gone, so if you don't mind just, you know, going now.
This is Julie saying, mad props to that prehistoric bird that flew in front of the Concorde right there at the end.
And this is Haley saying, take a drink every time Nissa goes prophecy mode.
We'll see you next week.
Annalise.
Cheers.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Want to keep the conversation going? You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Or just send us a good old-fashioned email to feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com. You can also give us a phone call at 754-225-5477. That's 754-CALL-GPR, and you may hear your voice on a future episode of the show. Everything's got to end sometime, otherwise nothing would ever get started. Join us next week for a brand new episode.
Jacob Hansen. Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2021. We'll see you next week.